This is a special edition of the USACE 8. Let's fly with the topic, the TSF.
I'm Bryant McFarlane. I'm the curator of the U.S. Army Aviation Museum and Training Support Facility.
I'm Billy Croslow. I'm the Army Aviation Branch Historian.
What is the TSF?
TSF is a multifunction warehouse facility. It is used for the storage of artifacts. It's used for the training of soldiers. It's also used as a museum quality level storage facility for very, very important artifacts for Army aviation history.
We also conduct a number of historical training events there, such as the mandated history classes for every flight school student, as well as professional development courses that focus on historical topics, such as the acquisition of aircraft, the development of the technology involved with aircraft, or the technology involved with arming or doing other things with those aircraft.
What is the TSF's actual name?
Its actual name is the William A. Howell Training Support Facility. So although I'm sure Billy here will tell you a lot more about William Howell, William Howell ultimately would end up as the very first curator of the Army Aviation Museum and would build the collection from zero to what it is today. So he is a monumental figure both in the importance of this facility as well as his care and concern for the training of soldiers. But as far as to who William A. Howell was, I'll leave that to Billy.
Colonel Howell was a World War II veteran, and most notably beyond his service in that war, he led the first presidential flight detachment. He established the first sort of rotary wing movement of an American president. He moved President Eisenhower around, and initially the Army had that mission. They also were responsible for moving President Kennedy around, but shortly after the Kennedy assassination and Johnson moving to the presidency, the Marine Corps gets the mission because there's a string of sailors in the Oval Office, and they want to have their team fly the president around. Nonetheless, Colonel Howell was the first person to establish that executive flight detachment and really is an integral part of aviation history, aside from his efforts as the curator and the founder of the first museum.
What is the relationship of the TSF to the museum and the Army Museum Enterprise?
The relationship is one of very interesting proportions. This is the only facility in the Department of Defense that has both a training support facility and a branch museum combined. So although there are three other training support facilities, those branches only get a training support facility. They do not have a museum. So we have both aspects of it. So our museum is our public-facing portion of the enterprise, whereas the training support facility is the actual training, the meat and potatoes of what TRADOC establishment is set to do.
The museum is the public-facing side, so is the TSF available to the public?
The TSF is available to the public once a quarter. The TSF itself is set up in a manner that is structured very loosely for instruction, but as I said before, it is a working warehouse. As just yesterday, we had students in the facility as we were tearing apart an aircraft, getting it ready for shipment out to Fort Knox. So these aircraft that are coming in and going out, some of them are in for restoration, some of them are for storage, some of them are set exactly for explaining one idea or one concept about the evolution of flight. So they're not necessarily set up with stanchions. They're not set up with safety in mind. So there's low hanging rotor blades. There's all these other things that are in play that make it not necessarily a place where you could bring just anyone to. So it does require not only for someone to lead you through for the context to make sense, but to make sure that your safety is paramount.
Can you tell me more about what's housed in the TSF?
Absolutely. So we carriage the history of Army aviation from 1908 to present. So in that facility is the very first truck that was used to support Army aviation maintenance, the first standardized truck used by the Army. We have very unique aircraft such as Sopwith Camel, FD-51 Mustang, the advanced blade concept helicopter, the very first Huey, the XH-40. We have a number of prime exemplars of aircraft as well as unique exemplars that exist nowhere else on the face of the planet. And we are working with our private foundation that is really the bulking enterprise of the museum that has set up a virtual tour of the museum itself, and they're working to get a virtual tour set of the training support facility to allow everyone to have access whenever they would like at any time. So we are working to try and make it more accessible to more people more times.
Regards to some of the aircraft that we have there, we also have things that weren't adopted, such as Comanche Number 1. Oftentimes people ask, why do you display or talk about a machine that was never adopted and never used by the U.S. Army? Well, this is a machine that indicates some of the failures of a process to acquire. By discussing these failures, by discussing the technology involved, we can learn from that just as much as we can learn from successes. So housing these aircraft, although they seem sort of counterintuitive, we didn't actually fly that in any kind of wartime environment. There's much to learn from it. And that's what we do in the training support facility. And the unique aspect of it is that we can pop hatches. We can get people in very close to the instrument panels. We can show them what we mean by the evolution of technology in a way we can't do in a museum, where the items have to be behind barriers, not just for everyone's safety, but to preserve the artifact itself. When they're escorted as students in the TSF, we can protect the item and learn from it. In a museum, we have to create some distance, as if we don't, people get hurt or the artifact could be lost.
Tell us more about the training that goes on.
The number one audience are literally flight school students. These are young officers, warrant or commissioned officers, who've just arrived, who will be undergoing flight training within a few weeks. On their initial arrival, they undergo basic leadership training, things that discuss how to read maps or how the Army communicates its plans. Part of that instruction is historical instruction with me, the aviation branch historian. That instruction is used to foster a sort of corporate identity, to give them a sense of the line they're joining, what their predecessors have done, and what the branch expects them to continue to do. It's a class designed to foster their creativity and to let them use their imagination as far as problem solving goes. Highlights, again, what their predecessors have done. The secondary group of students who come through are students in the variety of other classes that are trained here at USACE who are looking to get some historical background or context for their material. A great example of this would be the Aviation Maintenance Officers course. Those officers are here to learn how to lead the maintenance of the operating forces machines. And they come here to get a sense of those standards. After they do that training, right before they graduate, they'll spend a little time with me to see some of the historical context, to learn how the Army has been doing this over the decades, making sure that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past, but that we're able to learn from those. So those are the primary audiences.
We also support commands in leadership professional development scenarios. So building around what veins of effort you are trying to lead through on a local level, we can support that in the museum. So we've done everything from NCOPDs with ACLC, focusing specifically on the role of the non-commissioned officer in the evolution of Army aviation, all the way down through flight medics and flight surgeons training, joint service training. We've done support for all of these groups in trying to show them that this facility is a multi-purpose facility. And although these are the same objects, we can derive different lessons based upon the group that we're addressing with the same set of objects. So there's a tremendous amount of information to learn and to be learned and to be shared across the spectrum with this.
The last group that we train are folks that the command hosts. We take them through the training support facility so that they can get a sense of Army Aviation's corporate identity. By using these material artifacts, we can tell stories, build context, and have it hammered home in a way that we simply couldn't do if we had them in a briefing room and we used slides.
Are there resources available for academic studies, say for someone at the Army War College or the Sergeant's Major Academy?
Yes, there are. So there are efforts underway to digitize our collection of manuals, of texts, of photos. Those are long-term projects that are not necessarily as mature as what we would like. However, any one of those professionals out there in the force is more than welcome to contact Mr. Croslow or myself, and we are more than happy to run down and work through with these individuals to gain access to whatever they need to support their studies in a professional military environment.
Absolutely. We have collections of documents, some in digital format, some in paper. The problem for us right now is with this brand new building, those documentary collections are scattered all over Post, housed in various facilities, wherever we can stick file cabinets and boxes. What we've been doing and what we will continue to do for the next few months is centralize them in the training support facility, making access easier. And then when we get a little more assistance and maybe get some advice from some archivists over there at the TRADOC headquarters, we'll be able to catalog them more fully and have them available through the use of finding aids so that research can be done more efficiently.
We absolutely want to support the warfighter wherever they're at in doing everything that they need to do and providing them the very best of what we have available in any way, shape, or form.
What is the future of the TSF?
We have occupied essentially the first floor gallery. It is effectively as populated as it will be for the foreseeable future. Now, our efforts are moving towards the second floor gallery, in which we will have an evolutionary lineup of uniforms, aircraft weapons, engines, propellers, blades, transmissions, and basic ideas about the aviation core, everything from air traffic control through to flight planning, navigation aids, instrumentation, all those sort of things that sit in the background of aviation activity that aren't necessarily displayed in any other way, to be able to discuss those sort of aspects moving forward. So our second floor gallery is going to be very different than our first floor gallery. And that means that we'll be able to offer yet again, even more offerings, hopefully by the beginning of fiscal year 26.
If a civilian academic was interested in conducting research at your facility, is there a way forward for them?
Absolutely. So all they would need to do is contact me. Let me know exactly what it is that they're researching, and we can set a path forward for them to gain access to those records and move forward doing original research in our archives.
Thank you for listening to the USAS 8, brought to you by the United States Army Aviation Center of Excellence.